Hi, this is Greg Peters of The Reluctant Networker. Welcome to Connections Quick Tips, Volume 1. It's funny, as I look back, I can see how much networking has had an effect on the successes in my life. Picking out almost any significant event inevitably leads to someone who helped me to achieve it. This is the strength of networking. So many people view networking as just a means to find clients or find a job that it's become almost synonymous with selling. In reality, it's all about creating the web of relationships which provide an infrastructure to support our achievements both in our professional and in our personal lives. I recorded most of the short pieces in this audio program for the Lucianne Lands Business Insider radio show on WLBY 1290 AM in Ann Arbor. They're small nuggets containing tips, techniques, and theory designed to help the show's listeners develop their own strong network. The original order was fairly random, so it made sense to organize things into some broad categories. I stuck the theory section up front because I've always believed we need to understand why we're doing things before we can choose what to do. After that, I moved into more practical matters with sections on preparing for the event, techniques to succeed at the event, and then more concepts to support the long-term networking, which is where the true power of your relationships start to pay off. I hope these quick tips can inspire you to building that powerful network and give you some ideas on how to start. Remember, networking is just about building mutually beneficial, long-term relationships. It's the business equivalent of making friends. Friends who will want to help us succeed in all areas of our lives. Section 1. Networking Theory. As I mentioned, even more important than what we do are the reasons why we're doing it. It's not just networking. Our mindset about anything in life can drastically change our chances for success. Walking into an event with our sole focus being on how we can benefit will almost certainly lead to a weak and shallow network. This first set of quick tips is all about getting ourselves in the right state for connecting with other people. What mindset will lead to the most productive use of our time? What are the dangers we need to be aware of? How can we have some fun? These tips are the important ones to remember, as they'll inform what behaviors we choose in the future. Remember that networking takes time. When it feels like a long hike uphill, take a few minutes to listen to these ideas and you'll remember that the view from the peak will make it all worth it. Networking success, it's all about your mindset. Many people panic at the thought of attending a networking event. They imagine walking into a room full of strangers and having to sell their product or services to whomever they meet. Yuck, no wonder they don't like networking. Here's the secret. Networking is not about selling. It's about making mutually beneficial long-term relationships, kind of the business version of friendship. With that in mind, the next time you're going to an event, pretend you're a kid out on the playground looking for a new friend to play ball with. You might even look around for the poor lost soul standing there hoping someone will pick them for the team. Try to get them in the game. Remember, you're looking for a connection, not a sale. Find out who they are as a person. Be curious. Ask questions. Get their business card. If you have a good feeling about them and you're really on top of things, schedule a lunch or a coffee for later. Oh, in case you were wondering, that coffee, you aren't going to be selling there either. You'll just be continuing to develop your relationship. Approach people with that mindset, with a genuine interest in who they are. Find out how you can help them without selling to them. You'll end up taking away a lot of the networking reluctance that you may once have felt. I also guarantee you'll have a heck of a lot more fun and end up being more profitable in the long run. The dangers of rushing your networking relationships. Networking connections, just like any other kind of relationship, go through various stages. They start out at an awareness level, where you each know the other's name and company. Then you go through a process of relationship development, where you learn about each other as individuals. Finally, you reach the stage of trust, where the best business happens. The mistake that a lot of new networkers make is trying to skip ahead in the process. They want something from a relationship before it's developed to the right level. At its worst is when they try to sell to a person whom they just met, but even something as simple as signing them up for an email newsletter might overstep the bounds. The danger in this is that the imposition can taint the developing relationship, sometimes to the point of killing it altogether. So, since we want to develop strong relationships in our network, how can we avoid overstepping the limits? Simple. Just treat them as if they were a friend or acquaintance outside of business. If you just met them, probably the most you can expect is they'd be willing to get together for coffee. If you've met a couple of times and shared some personal information, the names of family members and pets, for example, then you can ask if they'd like to receive your newsletter. Until you'd be willing to lend them your car for the weekend, you can't expect them to send you business. After all, you are asking them to put their reputation on the line. Remember, a networking relationship is just the business version of friendship. Just as you wouldn't ask someone you just met to help you move, you also shouldn't expect them to vouch for you when they barely know your name. Be patient, and let things develop at their own speed. Shortening the networking delay. One of the many challenges in networking is, if you're just starting out, it takes a lot longer to be effective than most people realize. I tell people that the best time to start their network is at least a year before they need it. The second best time is right now. The reasons behind this delay have to do with trust and risk. Depending on your business, potential customers feel different levels of risk with buying from you. For example, most people don't think it's risky at all to purchase a bouquet of flowers from a florist. That transaction requires a relatively low level of trust. Now, having them provide the flowers for your wedding? That's a completely different level. Your networking delay can be anything from a month to a year or more. Basically, this is the amount of time it takes from when you meet someone to when they trust you enough to overcome their perceived risk. Now, wouldn't it be great to shorten that delay? You can. All you have to do is borrow someone else's reputation. This is also called a referral. You already have people in your network who trust you implicitly. Your current and former clients are perfect examples of this. If they recommend you to someone who already trusts them, then it will go a long way toward establishing the trust necessary for you to do business. This is why you should be networking to develop friends and ambassadors, not clients. Your networking connections are the ones who will find the clients for you. So, if you're just starting out with your networking, I highly recommend beginning with those who already trust you. Take them to coffee and take an interest in them. Before you know it, you'll turn them into friends. Friends who'll go out of their way to help you succeed. Narrow your focus and increase your business. One of the basic concepts of good networking is to know your target market. It will define what networking groups you join, which events you attend, and what referrals you request. Great! So, really, what is a target market? Simply put, it's the specific group whom you prefer to serve as a business. Please note that I said prefer to serve, not can serve. All of us can serve a lot of people. You just don't have time to network with everyone. So the goal is to narrow your target by picking a market with which you like to work. The first step is to take a look at your current and former customers. Select the ones which were the most fun to work with or the most profitable. Now figure out what attributes they have in common so you can focus on more of the same. Again, let's just ask some more questions. Are they local, regional, national, or global? Are they within a particular industry? Are they a startup, growth stage, mature, or declining company? How many employees? How much revenue? If they're individuals, what are their ages? How many members in their family? Do they live in the city, the suburbs, or out in the country? So after a few more questions, where you used to say, my ideal client is anyone who wants a new car. Now you have, my ideal client is a young couple in their late 20s who just had their second child and have suddenly realized that their current car just isn't big enough. Remember that this is who you prefer to work with. You'll still help anyone who needs you. You just won't be seeking everyone. The side benefit is a specific target market draws a mental picture that will help your network focus their efforts on your behalf. So take a little time to narrow your focus. You may be asking for a smaller slice of the pie, but you won't have to share it with anyone. Keep your networking upbeat. You probably know someone like this. You say hello, they say hello. You say, how are you? They proceed to tell you exactly how miserable their life really is at great length and detail. Eventually, you are reduced to extreme measures to escape the litany of despair and depression. Don't be that person. I know this might come as a shock, but most people actually prefer to be around folks with a positive outlook on life. Emotions are contagious. If you don't believe me, try smiling and saying hello to someone you've just met. They'll probably smile right back. So here's my advice. If someone asks you how you're doing, focus on the many blessings you currently enjoy in your life. Is your business doing well? Talk about it. If not, then talk about your plans to turn things around. Are you planning a fun vacation? Tell me more. If not, what fun things are you doing instead? What was the best thing that happened to you in the last week? Something good, not just something less bad. Share it with those around you. It may seem silly, but when someone asks me how I am, you'll almost never hear me say, fine, or just okay. I'm almost always doing fantastic. Why? Because I've noticed that more people want to talk with me when I keep my internal compass focused on what makes my life fantastic. We have plenty of doom and gloom going on around us 24 hours a day, but we also have just as much joy and light. Don't ignore the darker part of life, but just acknowledge it and move on. Those in your network will appreciate a ray of sunshine far more than another dark cloud. Network like a toddler. As of this recording, my daughter is 2.5 years old. She's full of excitement and curiosity about the world. One of her favorite things to do is go to playgroups. At playgroups, she gets to meet and play with other kids, play with toys she's not seen before, she gets a snack, someone reads her a story, and she walks out with new friends she can look forward to seeing again. How wonderful, right? I ought to be a child again. But what does that have to do with networking? Well, I was thinking about networking events and the fact that a lot of people don't like attending them. They either go to the events because they feel like they have to and walk out feeling grumpy, or they don't go at all and feel guilty about missing it, even if they aren't convinced it's worth their time. You've probably heard all the complaints and excuses. It's not a good time of day. I'm too busy. I never get anything out of them, and so on and so on. But at those gatherings, you get to meet and chat with other professionals, play with ideas that you've not considered before. You get refreshments, or maybe even a meal. Someone gives a presentation or tells a story. And you walk out with new connections you can look forward to seeing again. Wait a minute. Networking events are just playgroups for adults. The only real difference is us. If we approach networking events with all the joy and anticipation that a toddler brings to the table, we would have a lot more fun. And we'd probably make a lot more powerful connections and friendships, which would lead to success in both our business and personal lives. The paradox of networking. Why do we network? Fundamentally, at the bottom of it all, at the very secret place deep within our hearts, we know that we are doing it for our own personal gain. We want to extend our network to improve our chances of landing the job or landing the client or getting a good deal or just giving us the ability to get more things done. We want to increase our power and control within our world. Now, here's the paradox. In networking, we can only do that by first serving other people, by giving them control and power within their world. Strange, right? In fact, if we try to approach networking from the perspective of what's in it for me, other people quickly discern that we are users who are not to be trusted. We try too hard to sell, to arrange, to schmooze, to manipulate. Ironically, our own attempts to control are what makes us lose control. If instead we just look for ways to help others achieve their goals, suddenly, and almost as if by magic, our goals start being met. And the odd thing is, it's a heck of a lot more fun to help another person succeed rather than try to force the world to bow down and meet our needs. What this means is that we should choose the groups we join or the events we attend based on how well it can help us achieve our networking goals. Then we have to let that go and approach these opportunities with a sincere desire to help with no expectation of immediate return. The extent of our success is measured by our skill in mastering this mindset. Beware the networking gaps. I used to send out a bi-weekly newsletter. Occasionally, I'd miss that scheduled delivery. Between travel with my family and my business getting completely out of control, I'd just let an issue or two slip. Okay, maybe it was more like 10 issues. This underscores a challenge with networking. The best networkers have made networking a consistent and regular practice. Every day, they take time to make their connections. Networking is no longer just something they do. It has become a part of who they are. When we try to do this ourselves, though, we discover that every once in a while, life throws us a curve. Maybe we catch a cold, maybe we go on vacation, maybe our networking pays off to such a degree that we temporarily don't have time to network. I'm here to tell you that this is the most dangerous time for your success as a networker. These gaps break up your consistent behavior, and before you know it, you've allowed your networking practice to lapse for weeks, then months, then years. The challenge is that networking has a certain momentum to it. If you miss a day, or maybe even a week, you won't see an immediate downturn in your results. Just like eating one cheeseburger isn't going to destroy your health. The long-term results of skipping longer and longer periods of time, though, are that you'll eventually see your network begin to evaporate. If you'd like to avoid that, then I have one bit of advice. Never miss your networking. Even if you just make a single call or send one email, if you just post an update on Facebook or LinkedIn, do something. Never miss a day. Make the practice not just something you do, but an integral part of who you are. That's the way to become a truly great networker, one day at a time. Section 2. Event Preparation. Several years ago, my wife Lisa felt a sudden inspiration to paint our downstairs powder room. I didn't blame her. It was a small space to start with. Add in peeling, dark wallpaper with a dated pattern, and I'm sure you can imagine her irritation every time she walked in there. Well, she got to work. She spent days removing the old wallpaper and repairing the wall surfaces. It took even more time to tape the corners and prime the walls and trim. After all that work, her energy was starting to run out, and she still hadn't started actually painting the walls. Being a sensitive husband, I picked up on her discouragement and promised that I would take over, much to her gratitude. A few hours later, the bathroom with its new coat of paint looked great, and I was a hero. Of course, I knew that the actual painting part of the project is easy after all the prep work is done. I couldn't have done anywhere near as good a job if it hadn't been for all the work Lisa had already put in. Networking works pretty much the same way. If we try to just attend the events without doing our prep work first, the best we can hope for is that we'll luck out and somehow we'll get the results we're looking for. More likely, we'll end up wasting a lot of time, networking inefficiently with the wrong people who couldn't help us even if we could tell them what we needed. This is the strategic side of networking. We're trying to get ourselves near the right people at the right time with all our tools at hand. Then we can focus on our efforts to build the relationships which will support us in the future. Group participation is more than just showing up. One of the best things you can do for your networking practice is to join a business group or association. Attending the various group events will likely bring a referral or two your way. The challenge is, if the group is large, such as a local chamber of commerce, you can easily get lost in the shuffle. You really need to do something that lets you stand out. The best thing is to pitch in and help. One of the basic precepts of group networking is that you should only join a group if you think you have something to offer. You must give back, and know your annual dues don't count. Fortunately, giving back is easier than you might think. Most groups have numerous committees, boards, and other volunteer opportunities. These subgroups plan and organize the various activities for the other members. Find one that speaks to you, that needs your particular skills, and join in. These smaller groups usually require fairly little time. Often it won't be more than 1 hour-long meeting a month and possibly some extra activities outside the meeting, some of which are excellent networking in and of themselves. In return, you get regular meetings with a much more stable membership. Most people who join these subgroups take their responsibilities seriously and show up a majority of the time. They also tend to be the best networkers. They have strong connections, which they are usually quite happy to share. So definitely, find a few groups you can join, pay your dues, and attend the events. And then go one step further. Participate. Set up a system for networking success. One of the most important rules of networking activities, whether it's over the phone, in person, or via the net, is that you must participate. The challenge is that we're all busy. If left to our own devices, we have 19 other things clamoring for our attention. This is why I recommend having a system to help you expand your daily networking activities. For me, the best networking systems have 3 aspects: a limit, a schedule, and a reward. Let's break this down a bit. First, the limit. This is basically how you'll know when you're done with this particular activity. Your goal should always be something that you think you'll be able to accomplish easily and yet will move you in the direction you ultimately want to go. For example, you might have the goal of sending just one checking in email each day to someone in your network. Next, the schedule. Consistency is always better than intensity. Put another way, it's better to spend 10 minutes every day than to try to cram in a full 2 hours one day a week. What we're trying to do is establish the habit of networking. To that end, the best thing you can do is pick a specific time every day during which you'll pursue this particular activity. Finally, the reward. Now, by rewards, I don't necessarily mean anything lavish or expensive. For example, when I've completed my daily networking tasks, I get to read my comics. Nothing particularly exciting, but it does get me to make those calls each day. Set up a system like this for 1 or 2 networking activities you want to pursue. As you follow your system, you'll find that the goal is easier and easier to achieve. As that happens, step it up a notch. Try new activities. Before you know it, people will be asking you about how you've achieved such amazing networking results. The Networking Event Toolkit. We've all had that dream where we walk into the classroom only to discover that everyone else is prepared for an exam, one that we never studied for.
Fortunately, we usually wake up at about this point with a sigh of relief. Showing up at a networking event without our materials can make us feel the same way. Unfortunately, we can't just wake up from that. To avoid that unprepared feeling, take a few minutes the night before just to set out your networking toolkit. Here's a list roughly in order by importance. 1. The event information. If you don't know when and where, then all the rest of it will be a waste of time. Take particular note of how long it'll take you to get there. Showing up late can put a real dent in your networking opportunities. 2. Your calendar. If you decide you want to meet with someone for coffee, schedule it while you're still in their presence. It saves a lot of hassle later. 3. Clothes. If anything can make you late, it's rushing around the house looking for that shirt or blouse which you thought was hanging in your closet. 4. Business cards. Everyone knows how important the business card is. I will admit, though, that on more than one occasion I've shown up without mine. Don't tell anyone. 5. Business card holder. I use a card holder just because it makes it easier to separate my cards from those that I receive. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. You could even use a large paperclip or a rubber band in a pinch. 6. Extra business cards. Because I only hand out cards when someone asks for one, I rarely run out of them. When it does happen, though, I can always pull out the ones I keep stashed in my wallet. A pen. Jotting down a quick note on the back of their card can help you remember where you first met someone. 8. A notebook. You never know when you're going to want to take more notes than'll fit on the back of their business card. 9. A name tag. If you have a permanent name tag that you like to wear, be sure that you get it on the pile, too. Creating a toolkit for attending networking events can make it a lot easier to feel comfortable when you eventually walk through the door. On top of that, you'll save time in the long run, since you won't have to scramble around at the last minute trying to get everything together. Take a few minutes now to make sure you are a more effective networker later.
Don't get caught without your homework. I'll be the first to admit it. I still make a lot of mistakes in my networking practice. I just hope others can learn from my experiences, both good and bad. Recently, I walked into a networking event and began mingling with the other guests. The organizer, a good friend, called me over and introduced me to a young woman who was standing near him. It was a little loud in the room and I didn't quite catch her name, so I had to ask again. When I finally caught it, I had a dawning realization and blurted out, "Oh, you're the speaker today." Fortunately, being an excellent networker, she just chuckled at my ignorance. It was only at this point that I noticed the large display of her videos behind her. Yes, truly one of my finest moments. Now, if I had taken just 5 minutes to look up her name, which I had known about for weeks, I might have been able to present myself in a more professional and appreciative way. Instead, I came off as a bit of a goof. If you'd like to avoid the goof label, take a minute or two before the next event and do your homework. Do a quick Google search on the speaker's name. If they have a website, do a brief look through to see what they do. If they have a blog, scan some of their recent entries. I also like checking them out on LinkedIn and Facebook. They'll often have a picture of themselves there. That'll help you pick them out in the crowd right away. If the event doesn't have a speaker, you can follow the same process with the event organizer, or you might even check out an attendee or two if the guest list is available. While most people won't do this, many master networkers do. And would you rather stand out as a master or a goof? Goals make events worth attending. You've heard it before, and maybe you've even said it yourself. I don't know why I keep coming to these events. They're just a waste of time. I can almost guarantee that whoever said that didn't have a goal in mind when they first walked in. Many of us set goals in our lives. We know how much we want to make, how much we want to weigh, and where we want to go on vacation this summer. Setting those goals is an empowering act which drastically increases the chances that we're going to get what we want out of life. Knowing that, why wouldn't we set goals for our networking activities? If you're new to the practice, stick to easily achievable goals. In fact, if you're brand new to networking, you might try, "I'm going to show up on time and figure out where the restrooms are." As you become more comfortable with the idea, you might give a shot at something more sophisticated, such as, "I will meet 2 new people, talk with them for 5 minutes, and get their business cards." If you're truly advanced and you've been to this particular group before, you might really go out there with, "I'm going to meet 2 new people, chat with them for 5 minutes, find out their challenges for the upcoming year, and introduce them to one of my contacts who can help them with that challenge." Like I said, that's for the advanced folks. No matter what goal you decide on, you gain one other advantage from having set it. When you've completed your goal, you get to go home. Knowing where the finish line is definitely helps you run the race. Business cards. Why they're important. People attach a lot of importance to their business cards. They spend a lot of time designing them, choosing the paper, even sweating over the glossy or matte finish. After all, when they hand those babies out, people are going to be asking them for two or even three more because they'll want to frame one copy and then pass out the rest to the closest and most valuable members of their network. Yeah, right. All kidding aside, most people think that business cards are designed to bring in business. The whole reason they hand out as many as possible at networking events is in the hopes that one or two people will be motivated to call them. The cold, hard truth is, in general, that's just not really likely to happen. In reality, the most important cards are the ones you receive and bring back to the office afterward. So, why should you bother having your own card? Two reasons that I can think of. First, expectations. Most people think if you don't have a business card, then you aren't a serious business. Lacking that little slip of paper with your name on it, they can't believe that you're for real, so they're going to feel completely justified in dismissing you out of hand. Second, connections. Every once in a while, you are going to run into a real networker. These are the folks who actually do something with the cards they receive. These are the people with whom you really want to connect. Make sure they have the means to do so. Okay, I can think of one other reason to have your own cards. You can drop them in the fishbowl with the other business cards at restaurants and trade shows in the hopes of winning a free lunch. So do go out and get your business cards. Just keep in mind why you have them and don't place too much significance on the fact that someone asks for one. They're probably just being polite. Or they just might be that million-dollar connection you've been trying to make all along. Show up early for networking success. I read somewhere about territorial behavior among felines. As I recall, it basically said that in cats, whoever's in the spot first owns the spot. Anyone showing up later has to ask permission to be there. So, what does this have to do with networking? Have you ever just barely made it to a networking event on time? Almost everyone is there. Most of them are already seated. You have to walk into a room of 300 strangers. It's kind of an anxious feeling, isn't it? For some reason, we perceive that everyone is looking at us as we walk in, and it's up to us to prove ourselves worthy. Now switch the situation. Imagine you're one of the first ones there. You walk in, drop your bag at a seat, and you're ready to network. You have time to hang your jacket, get the lay of the room, and maybe even nibble from the buffet table before everyone starts arriving. Now they are the ones who are walking into the room full of strangers, while you get to be the one who owns the room. A much better feeling, right? On top of that, you'll have the opportunity to network with the event organizers, and maybe even offer to help out, and you can connect with the other folks who get there early. Not coincidentally, they're probably some of the better connected folks there too. So if you often feel a little uncomfortable walking into a networking event, make it your personal goal to show up just 15 minutes early. You'll be surprised at how much more in control you feel, and that can only lead to better networking. Section 3. Event Techniques. Maybe you were one of the popular kids when you were in school. You know, the ones who felt completely in control in every situation and were accepted by every group and social strata within the student body? If so, you may not need this next part. For the rest of us, walking into a networking event can feel like the first time we walked into a school dance. At best, we feel uncomfortable, wondering whether it's going to be a complete waste of time, whether we're wearing the right clothes, whether the other kids will like us. At worst, we are positively panic-stricken, our only hope being to get our food, find a table by ourselves, and bury our heads in the program so we don't actually have to interact with anyone around us. Believe me, I've been there. I'm also here to tell you, if you can follow a few simple techniques, networking at the event becomes a lot easier. At the heart of it is the simple understanding that it's almost never about you. Just keep the focus on the other person, and you'll never have to worry about what to say and whether your shoes match your socks. They'll just remember that you care.
Acting like a host brings out your best at a networking event. Many folks feel uncomfortable attending networking events, mainly because they don't know how to act. Who should they talk with? How long? What should they say? They would dearly love it if someone would walk up to them and start talking so they don't have to take that first step. Unfortunately, that probably won't happen, so we have to take charge of our own success. Here's what we can do. Start acting like the host of the event. Think about it. Hosts should never be late for their own parties. This means you should show up early for the event. When you get there, scope out the facilities. Where are the restrooms? Is there a coat check? Where is it? What's the agenda? Who's the speaker? If you take only 5 minutes before everyone else starts to arrive, you'll have made yourself quite valuable to your fellow attendees. Hosts make the guests feel comfortable. As a host, you won't have the temptation to sell to the guests. After all, that would put them on the spot, and no one likes that. Instead, you can ask questions about them. Taking interest in others is at the base of good networking. Hosts connect their guests. Making introductions at networking events endears you to both of the people you're trying to bring together. They will remember you for your kindness. That's a good place to start. You'll be surprised how much switching your focus from yourself to the comfort and happiness of the other people in the room will improve your own experience. So take a few minutes to walk up to that guy hiding in the corner. He could be your next million-dollar friendship. Don't deal the deck. Walking away from a networking event, I often find my pockets full of business cards, many of which I didn't ask for. What a waste. If I didn't have a 5-minute chat with someone, how would I know if meeting them later would be of any use to either of us? If I can't remember anything about a person, their card will usually end up in the trash. To avoid this unhappy ending, I've compiled a short list of business card etiquette rules. First and foremost, only give them a card if they ask for it. If they don't ask, they aren't interested in you, at least for now. Dealing the deck and forcing the card into their hands is just a quick trip to the trash can. Second, if they do ask for a card, only give them one. The folks who give out two or more cards at a time are imposing tremendously. After all, passing someone an extra card means that you want them to refer you to someone they know. Why in the world would someone lend you their reputation, which is exactly what a referral is, on the basis of a 5-minute conversation? Third, it's a harsh truth, but even if they do ask for the card, the chances that they are going to contact you are somewhere between slim and none. They will have the best of intentions, but most people don't have a system to deal with business cards, and ultimately, you guessed it, they end up in the trash. So what good is a business card? At a networking event, the only good card is the one you've requested from someone else, someone you want to develop a stronger connection with. When you get that card, commit to taking the first step and make contact. The rest is just making friends.
The dangers of being sales-focused in networking. You're at a networking event and find yourself chatting with two people. One of them is a perfect client for you. Oh, he doesn't realize it yet, but with a little careful questioning, he'll discover that he needs about 100 of your widgets. Wouldn't that be a great contract? Okay, what about the other guy? Well, he seems nice and all, but really doesn't have any use for widgets. So who should you focus your attention on? Oh, did I mention that the second gentleman is married to a corporate buyer who's looking for a supplier who can provide 1,000 widgets per month for the next 5 to 10 years? Does that change your answer? One of the most common traps in networking is to get caught with our sales hat on at a networking event. Maybe we haven't made our quota this month. Maybe we haven't made it for the last 3. Whatever the reason, we walk through the door on the hunt for clients and prospects, forgetting that we should be looking for ambassadors and friends. I know, I've done it myself on more than one occasion. So how do we avoid that trap? How can we network and not sell? For me, the best technique is to take just a few seconds before I walk in the door to remind myself of what my goals are. Usually, I just want to meet 2 or 3 people with whom I feel a connection and get their card so I can contact them later. Taking that extra moment helps me to refocus on the reason for showing up at the networking event in the first place, meeting new people. Remember, if you focus on building good relationships, finding prospects will take care of itself. When it comes to networking, ask, don't tell. A lot of people tell me that when they go to a networking event, they get nervous because they don't know what to talk about. The thought of sitting at a table with a bunch of strangers fills them with dread. So why not let the other people talk instead? Here's the trick. Instead of telling them about you, ask about them. At networking events, questions are your friends. They allow the other person to talk about their favorite subject, themselves, and allow you to control the flow of the conversation. Now, it's pretty normal after introducing yourselves to share what you each do for a living. If you aren't careful, though, the next conversational step is to discuss the weather. Try this instead. Ask them how they got into their business in the first place. You're bound to find out some interesting things about them, and they'll start to see you as someone who is really taking an interest in their life. If there's more time, ask them what they like to do when they aren't pursuing their career. They'll often talk about their hobbies, their travels, and their family. This is going to make them into a person to you, and that's great.
After all, we make friends with people, not businesses. Finally, ask the following question. If I'm chatting with someone later, what should I listen for to know that there's someone who should talk with you? You've basically asked them how you can give them a referral. That's a good way to start showing concern for their success. Oh, and don't be surprised if they ask the exact same questions right back at you. It's a natural behavior. The nice thing is, you'll already be prepared with your answers. After all, you were the one who came up with the questions in the first place. Small talk that's not so talky. Okay, let's admit it. To many of us, making small talk with strangers is a painful and awkward task that rates somewhere around getting our teeth cleaned at the dentist in the things we like to do scale. Unfortunately, it's also a necessary skill when it comes to networking, especially at a networking event. The alternatives are either to sit silently and stare at each other or try to sell, neither of which are likely to achieve our ultimate networking goals. So what's a reluctant networker to do? Here's the trick. Let them do all the talking. Your goal is just to learn a little bit about them. Ask a few questions, and then you only have to listen. Here are some areas and questions you might consider. Their interests. So, what sorts of fun things do you like to do when you aren't selling insurance? Their networking experience. I'm new to this group. Do you have any recommendations on how to make the best of it? Their current focus. So, what sort of exciting things do you have planned for the upcoming year? Their story. I've always been interested in accounting. You've been in it for a while. What do you see as the most important differences since when you started? Of course, you should answer any questions they ask, and if they're good networkers, they will. After all, in an ideal world, the conversational breakdown should be right around 50-50. Don't sweat it, though, so long as you aren't the one who's talking 90% of the time. Remember, your goal here is just to make the contact and learn a little bit about them. You should leave getting more in-depth for a one-to-one meeting after the event. Keeping that in mind, though, you'll find that asking some of these simple questions will make networking a lot more fun and interesting. Certainly a lot better than the 30-minute conversation about the weather. What are your challenges? How can I help? One of the strange side effects of networking in the business world is that many of the folks you talk with are going to assume that you're trying to sell them something. Even the simple phrase, "Let me know if I can help out with anything," takes on a meaning that you might not have intended. On more than one occasion, and I've used these words, or others like them, I've had my networking contact tell me that they don't have any work for me. Then I have to try to explain that what I really meant was how could I help them with anything that might be challenging them right now, whether or not it fits my professional skills. So I've been trying to figure out how I can short-circuit that particular pattern. Here's what I came up with. First, ask the question. So what challenges are you running into with your business right now? Depending on the depth of the relationship you have with this person, you could even extend that question to their personal lives. By the way, I don't recommend you ask, "What's your problem?" While it might seem semantically similar on the surface, apparently this is another question which can be misunderstood. Who knew? Anyway, while you actively listen to the issues that are foremost in their minds, you should also be asking yourself, how can I help? You may not be able to help them in a professional capacity. That's okay. In fact, this is where the real networking kicks in. You may know of someone who can help them with whatever the problem is. Offer to make the connection if they'd like. You'll become the hero for both of them. Then they're both likely to keep you in mind the next time something comes up which does match your professional interest. Remember, above all, your goal is to help solve their problem, not sell. Just ask the right questions and be interested in what they have to say. Then be ready to help. Double your networking results with a guest. One thing you could do to help develop a networking relationship is to invite the other person to a networking event that you think they might enjoy, and pay for them, of course, since they are your guest. The challenge with this is that your guest can often distract you from the ultimate goal of meeting more people. We have a tendency to stick with what's comfortable, and talking with people we already know definitely falls into that category. To gain the most from cooperative networking, you really need to come to an agreement ahead of time as to how you'd like to approach your partnership. Here are some plans you might consider and talk over with your guest ahead of time. You can split the time. Each of you spend part of the event doing your regular networking. Then, after you've achieved your goals, you can get back together and socialize. If you're feeling particularly skilled, you can keep an eye out for people whom your guest might like to meet. You can just touch base. First, agree to separate for the duration of the event. Then, periodically check in to see how things are going, especially if you have someone you want them to meet. You might agree to spend time immediately after the event, maybe at your favorite coffee shop, to review what happened and who you met. You can also establish some accountability. This can be done in addition to the previous strategies. Let your guests know what your networking goals are for the event so they can help keep you honest. You could also tell them what follow-up activities you're planning so they can check in with you later to make sure you're doing them. Working in concert with a guest, you can make an event doubly effective. Also remember, by helping them make good contacts, you're actually expanding your own network too. Ultimately, that will benefit you more than an hour or so of the two of you chatting in the corner by yourselves.
Section 4. Beyond the event. One of the biggest mistakes people make with their networking is thinking that attending the events is all there is to it. They show up, meet new people, chat with acquaintances, and then go back to work. And they're disappointed when the phone isn't ringing off the hook with opportunities from their network. Thinking of networking this way is kind of like thinking that gardening is just about putting the seeds in the ground. For those of us who have a bed of vegetables or flowers in our backyard, we know that after we place the seed, there's still watering, feeding, weeding, thinning, pruning, checking for pests and diseases, and then the eventual harvest, whether it's a bouquet in a vase or food on the table. Networking requires the same level of long-term focus. We might meet someone at the event, but until we've met for coffee, found out about each other's businesses and families, shared our past challenges and our future goals, we really can't say that we've established a relationship. Until we've helped them succeed, we really can't expect them to help us achieve our dreams. This next section is all about taking that seed we planted when we first met at the chamber lunch and nurturing it into a mutually beneficial long-term relationship, a friendship, if you will, where we each act as ambassadors and champions for the other. Only then can we hope that our networking will bring us the harvest of a successful life.
How should you start your network? Many of us have been building our network for a while. It's easy to fill up our networking time with telephone calls, coffees, lunches, and even the occasional breakfast. But what about those who are just starting out? For them, the idea of having to send even one email a day can be pretty stressful, since they don't have anyone on their list to send things to. What should they do? For those who might find themselves in that situation, let's make a list. Here are a few groups to consider. Clients and customers, both past and present. Remember, these are the folks who liked you so much that they were willing to pay you. They are a great group to use as the core of your network. Coworkers. These can be your traditional coworkers, or they can be anyone from the company, including your supervisor and subordinates. If you're an outside contractor, you can invite your contacts and any other contractors out for coffee on occasions. Friends. Remember that your network is not only for business. When was the last time you got together with a friend to see how you can help them succeed in their lives? Family. Your brother-in-law may be a bit of a goof, but maybe the guy has some unplumbed depths. Could he know your next million-dollar client? People in your address book. There was a reason you put them there in the first place. Find the ones where you say, "Oh yeah, that guy. I wonder what he's doing now." Put them on the list. People who've sent you email. Look through your old email archives and add in anyone who made you laugh or think. Supposedly, everyone knows around 250 people who'd come to their wedding or funeral. Are all these folks going to be great networking connections? Maybe not. But you'll never know until you actually take the time to reacquaint yourself and find out more about them. And you never know when one of them will turn out to be your goose that lays the golden eggs. What if they don't want to network? You go to a networking event and meet some really cool people. The next day, you give them a call to set up a coffee or lunch. They ignore you. For whatever reason, the connection is weak and there's a good chance of it disappearing entirely. What should you do? With the exception of some very rare situations, just let it go. I know it might be hard, but let's look at the possibilities. Maybe you left a message and they didn't receive it. Either they didn't check their email, or perhaps their answering machine burst into flames. You can try calling them again in a week or so, but by that point, you're almost moving into cold call territory. They may vaguely remember meeting you, but as far as they know, you might have picked their name out of a phone book. Now, maybe you left a message and they did receive it. For some reason, they didn't get back to you. You have to ask yourself, if they aren't good at returning messages to you, how they treat the referrals you give them. Also, if you try to contact them again, you may come off as pushy or desperate or both. Never a good way to start a relationship. They give you the brush off and tell you, call back next week. You know what? They probably don't remember you, and they think you're a cold caller. Of course, you can call them back, but the familiarity level won't be any better for a week of waiting.
Also, if they are brushing you off, they aren't in a mental place right now to be a good networker. It's hard sometimes to let go of the potential that every new acquaintance represents. Remember, though, for every possible connection that falls through this week, there are 4 more at the next event who'd love to be a part of a network as powerful as yours. And who knows, one of those 4 might be one of your past failures who's now in a better place to network. Are you doing the business card shuffle? Maybe this never happens to you, but in the past, on those rare occasions I'd clean off my desk, I'd find myself with piles of other people's business cards, folks who I never got around to contacting. Most of them I couldn't even tell you who they were or how we met. The problem was that I didn't have a good system for processing them. Over time, I finally came up with something that worked for me. First, I took a small box. I used some old business cards to create 3 sections. As soon as I return from a networking event, I empty all business cards into the first slot, my to contact file. Then each day, when I sit down to make my 3 to 5 calls or emails, I grab a card or two from that slot. If I wasn't able to reach them, but did leave a message or just sent an email, they would go into the next slot, the awaiting response area. Sometimes folks get back to me and sometimes they don't. If they don't, I have to decide whether they go back in the first slot or go into the trash. Often that depends on the impression I received when I first met with them. Finally, the third slot is for anyone with whom I was able to reach and schedule a coffee or lunch. This is the add to long-term area. Now they can still find their way into the trash from here. Standing me up for our meeting or trying to use that meeting to sell to me might send them into the circular file. That's a pretty rare occurrence. Once a week or so, I take the information from the cards in the final slot and add it to my regular contact list. This ensures that I will be doing my part to maintain the relationship over the long term. That's about it. It's not rocket surgery, and you may already have a system that works better for you. For those of us who are still flapping our wings down here with the rest of the flock, though, you might want to give this process a try. It'll help you renew and extend the connections in your network. That's something that can only bring you more success in the long run. Are you networking with stale business cards? Up until a few days ago, I've been working against a deadline on a large project. As a result, my networking time has slowed to a crawl. Though I still do it every day, but I haven't been keeping up with the new business cards I've received. Now that I've freed up my time, guess how I'm going to reconnect with these folks? In truth, I probably won't. Oh, I'll look through them, and depending on how old the card is and how much time I spent with a person, I may still try to contact them. I'm afraid, though, that most of those cards have gone stale. You see, the business cards you ask for are like loaves of fresh bread. They have a sell-by date. My completely unscientific rule of thumb is that for every 2 minutes you spend with someone at a networking event, you've got at most a day to contact them. After that, you're making a cold call, a difficult way to start a networking relationship. Think about the last event you attended. That person you spoke with in passing as you were hanging your jackets, are they going to remember you much beyond tomorrow? How about that guy you waited next to in the buffet line? If it was a long line, you might have 2 or 3 days before you become a faded memory. Do you remember that person you sat next to at lunch? You had a lengthy conversation about her passion for fly fishing. You made a first good impression, but if it takes more than 2 weeks to follow up, you might as well forget it. They aren't bad people for forgetting us. After all, there were probably people at that same event who didn't get stuck in our long-term memory. And we aren't bad people for not calling them. After all, they didn't call us either. When it comes down to is being aware of the limitations of that brief first meeting. Trying to connect with them after the card has gone stale is like making a sandwich with that loaf of pumpernickel that's been out on the counter too long. It'll be dry and tough, and in the end, it probably won't be worth the time to make it. Reaching out to be top of mind. In order for word-of-mouth marketing to work, you've got to be top of mind. It won't matter at all that you've met with hundreds of people in the last year. If they don't remember you, you might as well have stayed home. So, what can we do to keep ourselves fresh in their memories? Here are a few ideas. Connect with them on Facebook or LinkedIn or on your favorite social media site. While these services aren't optimal for forming new relationships, they do allow you to make that small connection to remind them that you're still around. Write an e-newsletter or e-zine. Of course, you'll get the permission of your contacts before you add their name to the list, but even if they don't read every one you send out, they will see your name on a regular basis. Just remember, this is an informative, educational, or humorous newsletter. No advertising. Email or call them. It's not a sales call, nor does it have to be a long message. Just check in with them now and again to see how things are going in their lives. Write them. Thank them. Congratulate them. Inform, amuse, or educate them. Send them a note or a card. Send them an article. Almost anything personal that comes through the mail, they will open. Remember them. Remember who they are and what they do, and especially who or what they are seeking. If you keep them in mind, you can bet they'll be likely to reciprocate. Come up with your own unique way to stay in contact. Remember that they can only recommend you if they can recollect you. Keep the gentle light touches going on a regular basis, and they'll definitely keep you in mind. To strengthen a connection, write a gratitude note. When was the last time you wrote a gratitude note? No, not a thank you note, a gratitude note. What's the difference? A thank you note does just that. It expresses thanks. Dear Grandma, thank you for the sweater you gave me for my birthday. It looks really swell, and I can't wait to wear it out sledding. I'll have Mom take a picture and send it to you so you can see how much I like it. Love, Timmy. It isn't a bad little note. In fact, we should be sending these all the time. A gratitude note, on the other hand, goes a step further. You'd send one of these notes to someone who's had a profound impact on your life. This is your opportunity to sincerely express your gratitude for everything they've done for you and let them know exactly how important the relationship with them has been to you. The recipient saves a gratitude note. Heck, they might even frame it. Try it sometime. You'll probably notice a couple of benefits. The first will be for yourself. By expressing your appreciation for this one good thing in your life, you'll begin to feel grateful for all the good things in your life. You'll be amazed at how truly fortunate you are, and you'll be much less likely to take things and people for granted. The second benefit will be for the recipient. We all need to feel appreciated at times. Your simple note can truly make someone's day, week, or even month. I don't know of anyone who's so confident in themselves that they wouldn't appreciate some recognition of the value they provide. So take a few minutes to acknowledge one of the many people who have made your life better in some way. You'll feel good. They'll feel good. It'll also go a long way toward building the strongest connections in your network. How are you addressing your envelopes? Not too long ago, I had the pleasure of meeting a new friend, Lois Weinblatt, who's the lead concierge at the Zingerman's Professional Presence Department. Lois is an amazingly accomplished networker. She's able to make anyone she meets feel special and appreciated. She showed that when, not long after our first visit, she sent me an invitation to the mail order open house. Yes, of course I went. I'm not stupid. What made the invitation special was how she addressed the envelope. She had written out to Greg Peters, cheese lover and superhero in residence. It was a little thing. She remembered that I enjoyed their one-year age cheddar and that I had superhero in residence as my title on my business card. Still, such a little thing meant that she was sending the invitation to me, not just to one more person on her mailing list. It's amazing how much those little things can help strengthen the relationship. To that end, we should be looking for opportunities to show our connections that we care through those small actions. A distinctive address is only one possibility. If someone is visiting you at your office, you might make a point of having their favorite coffee available. Maybe you could suggest you meet at their favorite restaurant for your next one-to-one. Remembering birthdays, anniversaries, names of spouses, children, and pets, these are all great opportunities to show that you are aware of and interested in them as a person. Keep your eyes open for the opportunities and let your creativity find the form. You'd be surprised how much something as simple as an address on an envelope can mean. In networking, sometimes the littlest things can carry the greatest weight. Always verify your tomorrow. Not long ago, I had a big client meeting to attend. Due to lack of communication, I showed up at the meeting only to find the building locked. I eventually prevailed on someone who worked there to let me in, and only to find that the client had decided to move the meeting to a new room on a different floor without telling me. So what does this have to do with networking? It's all about communication. Here's some of the information I now make sure I convey to those I'm planning on meeting. The fact that we're meeting. I'm going to drop them an email or give them a call to verify time, date, and location. The business day prior to the event. 2. What I look like. I don't know if you've ever had this situation. You show up at the coffee shop to meet a new person referred to you by one of your connections. At that moment, you realize you have no clue what they look like. I try to give people a brief description of myself or point them to a picture of me online. 3. How to contact me. People do occasionally have last-minute emergencies. Make it easy for them to let you know. 4. Request their contact information. Sometimes I'm the one with the emergency. 5. Homework. If we're meeting for a purpose which requires a preparation for either or both of us, I better make sure that we both remember. Now, of course, not all of this stuff is always necessary. If the person I'm meeting is a longtime friend, then I probably don't have to let them know what I look like. In all cases, though, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to verify that we're actually having the visit. Taking that little extra time will remove a lot of pressure off everyone's minds.
For the best referrals, get rid of anybody. One of the benefits of good networking practice is that every once in a while, someone asks you about who would be a good referral for you. This is your big opportunity. This is when the work of creating a network starts to pay off. Don't mess it up. Often when people describe their ideal client, they make the mistake of using the word anybody. The problem is that anybody reminds everybody of nobody. If your response sounds anything like, "My ideal referral is anybody who needs my product or service," then you're making it too hard for someone to help you. They don't know the details of your business, so they won't know who would be a good match for you. They're certainly willing to help, but they need a clear, specific answer to the question. Age, location, number of employees, industry, etc. The more focused, the better. "Wait just a minute," I can hear you say. "I really can help anybody who needs my product or service. I don't want to turn anyone away." Great. You aren't giving up anyone. You still can help anyone who approaches you. We're just talking about who you prefer. Keep this in mind. If your network were able to provide you with so many referrals that your business was at 100% capacity, and there's a very good chance it will, what kind of clients would you prefer to help? Ironically, the very act of focusing your attention on those you prefer and telling your network about it will result in a higher quality of referral and likely more of them. So get rid of the anybodies and get better networking results. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this program. I hope you found a nugget or two which will make your networking practice easier and more productive. Back at the beginning, I pointed out that every significant thing we accomplish in our lives, we do with the help of others. This audio program is no exception. That being the case, I'd like to single out a few people who helped make this possible. Thanks to Dean Erskine and Lucy Ann Lance for being willing to take a chance and let me contribute to their radio program. They do an amazing job making their guests feel welcome. Dean especially went out of his way to provide me with the edited versions of the original Quick Tips recordings. I want to thank my good friend Mike Wynn, who introduced me to Lucy and Dean and suggested to them that the content I wrote in my blog might sound good and be a good fit for their program. Mike is a skilled sales trainer and an amazing connector. He is always looking for ways to help the folks in his network. Jim Woods has been my business coach for a while now. I know that all this would still be just something I was going to do someday if it hadn't been for his help charting the course. My mom, Debbie Peters, deserves a big thank you also. She was the one who first taught me that networking is not sales. She has been and continues to be a big hero in my life. Finally, and most importantly, I want to thank my wife, Elizabeth Peters. None of this would ever have been possible if it hadn't been for her continual support and encouragement. She claims that she's one of the worst networkers ever, but don't believe her. She just makes everyone fall in love with her effortlessly, so she doesn't always realize how good she is. If you'd like to find out more about how to make your connections count, check out our website at www.thereluctantnetworker.com. In the meantime, get out there and start networking. After all, those connections won't make themselves.